Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Family Law in the UK, presented to you by Natasha Slabas, Family Law Partner. I now talk to you today, following on from episode 7, about fact findings in the family courts, to look closer at a very recent decision of Re-H-N and others, Children Domestic Abuse Finding of Fact Hearings. For those of you who want to know the neutral citation number, it's square bracket 2021 close square bracket EWCA CIV 448. And I also will look at the Domestic Abuse Act 2021, which was finally passed and received royal assent as of 29th April 2021, which was a huge landmark decision. The reason I decided to do an extra podcast about this all is because it shows you, when listening to episode 7, just how much the family courts seem to be keen to move forwards in a more reasonable and fair manner when dealing with these sorts of cases. And when I say these sorts of cases, fact finds are hearings which arise in private Children Act proceedings and also public children proceedings where there are issues of domestic abuse. And in the past, there's always been a rule that you file a Scott schedule, which lists out a roadmap, essentially limited to sometimes 10 or less in other cases, and more in exceptional cases, incidences of domestic abuse that the court then has to hear about at a sort of mini trial with oral evidence from the parties, and then make a determination on the balance of probabilities as to whether or not those incidences actually took place. So when looking, therefore, at the recent decision of Re-H-N, this concerned four appeals, and one of these appeals, Re-T, was concerning a mother who had made allegations of domestic abuse against a father of a child. They'd met online in January of 2014, and then in person in 2016 in Egypt, where the mother had lived at the time. And they then married only 4 days after they'd met. And then the mother came with the father to England on a spousal visa in February 2017. And she speaks very little English. And they then had a child shortly thereafter in the spring of 2017. But they separated by the end of the year in December 17. The mother made allegations of verbal and physical abuse, as well as rape and coercive control. And proceedings began on the 8th of June of 2018. And then by September of that year, the court decided a fact find was necessary, but the trial didn't actually take place until 14 months later, in November of 2019. And the judgment, which was being appealed in Re-H-N, was given on 13th December 2019. Permission to appeal was presumably made much, much later than the 21-day time frame that's usually stipulated by the courts, because it was granted out of time on 3rd November 2020, which was nearly a year later. And there was one particular incident called a plastic bag finding. And in that particular incident, the father came up behind the mother when she was on the floor with the child on her knee. And without warning, he came up behind her and put a plastic bag over her head and said, "This is how you should die." The father denied that any such incident had taken place. And in contrast to the findings as to the mother's evidence on some allegations, on this particular allegation, the mother spoke apparently with total clarity and there weren't any inconsistencies, but the judge went on to find, "I accept the mother's account of this incident. However, as there was no trigger to this event at all, I am not satisfied that it represented an attempt to kill, a threat to kill, or that the mother felt threatened, given her oral evidence. It may be that it was some sort of prank by the father that he now denies because of the allegations made against him. Indeed, the mother told social workers that the father had called this incident a joke. That said, it was an unpleasant, aggressive thing for the father to do and is not acceptable behaviour." Now, the father had made cross allegations of the mother, and the judge had found that the mother had slapped the father in December of 17, and there was another unpleasant incident with pushing and slapping on both sides on the next day. But the mother was not found to have threatened the father's eldest daughter, but apparently the judge found the mother had been aggressive to the father and shouted at him and his daughter in the restaurant. And the judge had considered each allegation individually, and she had said that, "While I have found that some of the mother's allegations are true and some of the father's allegations are true, and I am satisfied that this was a mutually abusive relationship, I am not satisfied that these represent anything more than the sad and bitter end of a relationship which met neither party's expectations, and I am satisfied that this relationship was one of mutual verbal and minor physical abuse attributable to relationship conflict. I am not satisfied that T, that's the child, would be at risk from her father. I am not satisfied that the father is a violent man as portrayed by the mother. It seems to me more likely that he was, occasionally, driven to anger and loss of control in conflicts with the mother in situations where she was verbally and occasionally physically abusing him. This is not an excuse, and I should not be taken as endorsing any abusive behaviour by either of the parties, but, having separated, I cannot see that either poses a threat to the other or to T." So the grounds for appeal were very wide-ranging in the case. The mother had stated that the trial itself was not fair and the judge prejudged the case, and that the judge had failed to appreciate the significance of the findings she did make, and that the judge's direction on the law was inadequate in terms of failing to make findings of anal rape, which were also alleged. Now, the appeal, Re-HN, tries not to minimise the seriousness of the allegation that wasn't found of anal rape, or to the arguments that were put forward by the legal professionals, but they did say that the judge's failure to make that finding would be dismissed, but that their mother's two other areas of challenge, that the judge failed to appreciate the significance of the findings she made, should be allowed. So, in the appeal, the judge was found to have failed to acknowledge the seriousness of two incidents where he made reference to dying or to killing. And in this judgment, the Court of Appeal judge says that the judge did not acknowledge that whilst she, the judge, may have concluded that the father did not intend either to strangle or to suffocate the mother, that does not prevent the mother from having been the victim of two extremely frightening episodes. The judge failed to recognise the impact upon the mother and the child. For our part, we do not accept that words which can be interpreted as threats to kill are words which are commonly used in anger, which do not import any genuine threat to life. The impact on the mother was abundantly clear, given that the judge accepted her evidence that when she was on the floor with a plastic bag over her head, she was feeling as though she wanted to die. In short, the failure to stand back and to consider the impact of her findings prevented the judge from asking the key primary question, which was whether the evidence established a pattern of coercive and/or controlling behaviour. The judge in the Court of Appeal then had to look at the cross-appeal of the father, and the barrister acting for the father had said that it was an outlier and inconsistent with the finding of the judge overall that the mother was an unreliable witness. And he said that the evidence was scant. And he suggested that the judge wrongly relied on the mother's demeanour as she gave the evidence of the event. But the appeal stated that the representative of father had difficulties with those submissions because the judge had been uncompromisingly critical about the mother's demeanour in respect of other aspects of her evidence. And secondly, the father's representative had to accept the mother had made an independent complaint about what had happened to a social worker, and there was therefore some supporting evidence to the allegation. Now, they thought that permission to appeal should be granted to the father to cross-appeal, but once hearing the detailed submissions from the father and the mother, they decided the appeal against the finding should be dismissed. So they said the judge heard each of the parties give the evidence and was entitled to make the finding she did on the evidence before her. So in conclusion of that particular appeal, which was one of four in this case of VHN, the judges said in their judgment that the judge fell into error in that she omitted to look at the findings she had made as a whole. We fear that having determined that the allegations of anal rape were not made out, she did not then step back and appreciate the significance of the matters which she did find to have been proved. As a consequence, the judge failed to appreciate the true significance and seriousness of the father's behaviour, or to consider whether these findings established a pattern of coercive and or controlling behaviour. And they then went on to say they had difficulty with the judge's observation of a strangling incident and the father saying that he would kill her, and that the judge had said those sorts of words are commonly used in anger but are not a genuine threat to life, which really is quite astounding when you step back and listen to that. And the appeal judges said, we're not convinced that that is the case, but in any event, those words need to be considered in context. Namely, that the judge had found that the father had probably held the mother in the vicinity of her neck at the time he spoke those words. There does not need to have been a genuine threat to life for this to be regarded as a signal piece, which should be single, it's a typo, of highly intimidating behaviour on the father's part. And they say they're particularly troubled by the plastic bag incident and the strangling incident only taking place 1 month before. So they say they couldn't see on what basis the lower court's decision could conclude that coming up behind the mother, who was on the floor holding her baby and putting a plastic bag over her head before saying that this was the way you should she would die, could be regarded as a prank. They said this was, in our judgment, the second of two intimidating and highly abusive incidents of a similar type carried out within a few weeks of each other. We say that conscious of the findings the judge made about the mother's own aggressive behaviour towards the father on occasion. So, in summary, the particular appeal that I've just described demonstrates how robustly the courts will now hopefully look to dealing with incidents which might be taken singularly as less serious, but when looking at a pattern of incidents, need to be analysed as a whole, and in particular, as with all children matters before the family courts, how those decisions will impact the welfare of the child moving forwards. So, turning just to the case as a whole, what the Court of Appeal judges have done is they've now made it possible that welfare issues are allotted court time appropriately, and they make it for the judge to decide on how to estimate the time where there are a series of events such as those which occur with coercive control, and they put it on the judge's back, so to speak, to make the decision on time estimates. In other words, the very fact and nature of the allegations being lengthy should not be a deterrent to hearing them properly and testing them properly so as to ensure the welfare of the child is safeguarded and is the paramount consideration. And another suggestion was made, which was that CAFCAS, which is the court and advisory service, it's sort of a social worker for the court, so to speak, have said that it would benefit the court if the parties were involved with CAFCAS but much sooner, and to do a much more detailed exercise with the family, which they called an enhanced form of assessment, and to meet with the child if appropriate, to also assist with the judge in whether a fact find is necessary in that particular case. Another thing that arose from this case is that the judges have finally put a line under the issue with approaching past coercive relationships. And what was said here is at paragraph 52 of this judgment. And the judges have said that as follows in relation to this point. Professionals would now rightly regard as old-fashioned the approach of the DVMPA 1976, where protective measures were only triggered in the event of violence or actual bodily harm. In like manner, the approach of regarding coercive or controlling incidents that occurred between the adults when they were together in a close relationship as being in the past, and therefore of little or no relevance in terms of establishing a risk of future harm, should, we believe, also be considered to be old-fashioned and no longer acceptable. The fact that there may in the future be no longer any risk of assault because an injunction has been granted, or that the opportunity for intermarital or interpartnership rape may no longer arise, does not mean that a pattern of coercive or controlling behaviour of that nature adopted by one partner towards another, where this is proved, will not manifest itself in some other, albeit more subtle, manner, so as to cause further harm or otherwise suborn the independence of the victim in the future and impact upon the welfare of the children of the family. And they go on to say, we are confident that the modern approach that we have described is already well understood and has become embedded through training and experience in the practice of the vast majority of judges and magistrates sitting in the family court. Where, however, an issue properly arises as to whether there has been a pattern of coercive and or controlling abusive behaviour within a family, and the determination of that issue is likely to be relevant to the assessment of the risk of future harm, a judge who fails expressly to consider the issue may be held on appeal to have fallen into error. So there you have a much more robust assertion, which essentially makes lower court judges who are being appealed accountable if they are found to have not looked at coercive control and patterns of behaviour as a whole. And that's where you see the case I described at the outset, which is one of the four analysed in Re-HN, was certainly applicable and linked with that landscape and a new mindset that's being urged of the lower courts, which is that where there is one finding that's made but another isn't made, it still doesn't take away the seriousness of the other allegation. And perhaps judges need to be more robust if there are similar allegations which are made as to how they might link with playing out of coercive control. Now, turning briefly to the Domestic Abuse Act 2021, this was a landmark bill to have been passed. And in family law, I'll focus only on how it affects and impacts the courts in family cases. It does the following. So perpetrators of abuse can no longer cross-examine their victims in person in the civil and family court in England and Wales, which is a massive development and change. And it seems unbelievable that that was allowed in the first place. The second thing is the offence of controlling or coercive behaviour has been extended to include abuse where the perpetrator and the victim no longer live together, which is also linked with the paragraph 52 and 53, which I read aloud of this Court of Appeal decision, which means that even if things have happened in the past, it doesn't necessarily mean that those behaviours might not manifest somehow and present harm to a child in the future. It's not an automatic gateway either into saying that because something happened in the past, it will definitely happen in the future. But the point is that there needs to be careful analysis of the specific facts of each case involving previous coercive control, where it's asserted that will likely manifest into future coercive control and thereby affect the welfare of the child. And the third thing that's relevant in the Domestic Abuse Act is the creation of the new offence of non-fatal strangulation, and that can carry a sentence of up to 5 years imprisonment. So looking at one particular section 63 of the Domestic Abuse Act, this particular part applies to special measures in family proceedings where there are victims of domestic abuse. So this is where it actually says in black and white that if the person is at risk of being or is a victim of domestic abuse carried out by a person listed in subsection 3, and that is a party to the proceedings, a relative of the party other than the victim, or a witness in the proceedings, then it is assumed that the following matters are likely to be diminished by reason of vulnerability. So the quality of the victim's evidence, and where the victim is a party to proceedings, the victim's participation in the proceedings. So special measures now need to be made and directed by the court in relation to a person who is, generally speaking, an alleged victim who is a party to the proceedings. And where those special measures are not applied, the court must, via subsection 2 of paragraph 63, Part 5, that is, of the Domestic Abuse Act 2021, it must provide the special measures. And where it does not, it must assume that the lack of doing so without such measures will have an adverse impact on their ability to give quality evidence and to participate properly in the proceedings. So it has a huge impact now that the court will have to infer. So the burden on judges is greater. There is a bigger task for them. But really, the family courts have needed to adapt and adjust to these sorts of measures for a long, long time. So this is much awaited legislative change. And I'm sure that it will have given many reassurance and some hope that there is a better chance for the future in being treated properly in family courts by judges and being thought through more carefully and in more detail. Of course, the system is overworked, but it doesn't take away from the fact it needs to work. So with that thought, I'll leave you with this episode 8, and I hope that you found it useful. If you have any queries, as ever, please do get in touch with me.